tell John to go fuck himself.
I would love to do that.
Hello, all you hip cats and hip kittens out there in Soxcast Internet land, and welcome to the grooviest media-related podcast since Bell Bottoms. We're about to flood your ears with a tidal wave of wild styles and vibes, so just sit back and ride that wave through episode 168. That's my intro this time. God. That's what I'm going with.
Wait, 168? I think we're 178, Polly.
Did I say 168?
Yeah, you did.
That's okay.
Awesome. I'll keep the take. I'm keeping it. Anyway, welcome everybody to Soxcast episode 178. How are y'all doing?
Man, didn't we already have 169?
I blew that whole intro, man. Man, that's what happens when you improv shit. You should just write shit down. I need to start.
Didn't notice.
Yeah. Yeah, we could have just barreled through, but John, as he is known to do, just has to ruin everything. So,
absolutely.
But we're here to talk about the opposite of ruining everything. We're here to talk about something that's coming up very soon. Got to give everybody a reminder, just because this is going to be the last normal episode we do before we do the really big thing. And we want everybody to be involved with the really big thing, do we not?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Absolutely. It's always really fun.
Of course, we are talking about the Soxcast Game of the Year extravaganza. It is the end of the year podcast where we each go over our top 10 games of the year. And the best part, I would argue, is getting those listener lists. And we want as many of them as we can get. And it's very easy to do. All you need to do, think of three games that you played this year. They release date does not matter, never has. If you played, I don't know, the hit arcade game Bosconian from 1982, for instance. If that was a game that you played and really liked this year, get it right on your list. So pick three games. Release date does not matter. And then you're going to want to write a little bit about each one, a little bit of a blurb. Try and take it easy on us, because we're going to be reading these out loud for the most part.
We're going to be reading so many.
A little blurb.
So get a blurb for each game.
They always give me the longest ones.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
So
I've got that silky smooth reader voice.
So
should do audiobooks.
Three games. Year of release does not matter. Write a little blurb and then send that list to podcast@socksmakepeoplesexy.net. Rhett, what's that address?
podcast@socksmakepeoplesexy.net. And you can also just record a list yourself
in
MP3 format if you want.
That, and we love those. If you would like to send us an audio version of your list, oh, we really love that too. And just keep it under 5 minutes and follow those same guidelines. And once again, send it to podcast@socksmakepeoplesexy.net. And we're going to need those before the end of December 12th, because we are going to be recording those shows December 13th and 14th. And you don't want to get left behind. You may have a little wiggle room or something the morning of, but there is no guarantee. Rhett, do you have a number on how many lists we've received so far?
We've only gotten four so far, and two of them are audio lists.
I like that.
Killer.
That's a good start. I want to see. I'd love a 50-50.
That's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, but I would love it. So,
Listeners love our dulcet tones too much.
Yeah.
They hear us read their opinions.
Yeah. I don't blame them. We are the smartest people in podcasting, so, you know. Who are we to argue with what the fans want? We live to serve. So, yeah, we want you to be a part of this great little experience. It's the most fun thing we do every year. The community loves it as well. And a lot of people are going to be hearing that. It's just a big celebration of all the games that
Honestly,
play.
It's really, really fun. It's just a really good time. And the more y'all, more friends that participate, the more fun it is. So please feel free. Don't think that your thoughts don't matter, that you didn't play enough games. If you're listening to this, you're a turbo nerd. Like, we're interested
for real. If you played one damn game this year and that's all you want to talk about, just do it. Just do it. Just send us the list. It doesn't, there is no, there is no, well, I'd send it if I had anything worth talking about. I've had so many people over the years come up to me after the show and just, well, I would have sent one, but I probably didn't have anything worth talking about. And that always drives
me. I mean, I did want to talk about X, Y, and Z and X, drives, but, you know, I didn't have to.
It drives me up a fucking wall. Anytime somebody comes to me and says that, so don't do that. Just do the thing, and then you did it, and you'll be a part of it, and you and everybody will celebrate it. All right,
you can pause right now and do it. You can just pause right now. Write a sentence blurb for each one. You can be done in 45 seconds, and then you can be you'll feel good.
Look, just send us a list of three games without blurbs. People do it, and those are Rhett's favorite.
Mm-hmm. This isn't like, you don't have to do it if you don't want to. It's just that everybody, I know our community has a lot of people that struggle with executive function.
Oh, for sure, for sure, for sure. And we're here to encourage you to overcome that executive function by taking this first step. And it's arguably a pretty small step. It's just video games. We all love video games. Let's all do the damn thing and talk about video games and celebrate them in a world that is just kind of crashing into the, you know, crashing into hell. At mock speed, but this is the one time of the year where we can all get together and just enjoy things.
Just have some fun. Just have a fun time.
To my immediate virtual right, he dressed up as your dad and wore your mom for Halloween. It's Red.
Oh, God.
That would have worked.
Lyric is that?
That one would have probably worked better if we were recording closer, you know, to Halloween, which is now a month behind
it's
us.
Fine, but, it's fine. I think we're all kind of jet lagged by a month right now.
Yeah.
Talking and we're like, I said it like, oh, there's a whole week left in November. And then it was also like, on the flip side, glass half empty. There's only a week of November left?
Yeah, yeah. Time it's
what the fuck did this year go?
This is your obligatory segment of the podcast where we continue to remind you that time is fractured in a way that we're never going to repair.
I have seen so many like, where did this year go from people?
Yeah.
Not even, you know, just everywhere.
Yeah, it's been insane, but
I feel like it was January. I was thinking about Game of the Year back then, right. And now it's we're getting there.
Oh, we're here. We're here.
Next time.
Yep. The next time we're together. To my immediate virtual left, if he was a Castlevania enemy, he'd be a flea man. It's John.
Hop, hop, hop. I'm hopping everywhere. Can't catch me.
Yeah, and it's the
You thought you had me. Oh, you got me with the whip, but I've got more than one hit point.
Yeah,
I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. And it's level 5 now, so you take a full quarter health bar if I touch you.
Oh, John.
I got you.
Gotcha. Gotcha again. John Thayer doing 4 HP damage each time.
Yep.
That's rough. That's rough.
You got good tunes going.
Yeah, you do. I think that's Wild Child.
Love Heart of Fire on this. Wicked Child is third stage. And I think there's Flea Men there.
There's Flea Men there. Yeah.
I was thinking of stage 5 because, oh God, Wicked Child is so good. Yeah. Wicked Child is like the underappreciated track from Castlevania 1. Yeah. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I think that one is my favorite, yeah.
I think it might be my favorite. Heart of Fire is really good. Vampire Killer is great. I really like Wicked Child.
Yeah. Man, Castlevania.
From Castlevania 1. Talk about a game of the year.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I would listen to people talk about that. I more people should play Castlevania 1.
John hastily rewriting his list. Okay, time to replay Castlevania 1. All right,
let's go. It's always a good time to replay Castlevania 1.
If I included Castlevania on the list every year I replayed Castlevania 1 Red, it would be a much more list. Regular fixture.
Like, I played Castlevania 1 like 2 or 3 times a year, so...
You're going to tell Polly to include Bosconian every year
she plays Bosconian. Listen, if Polly wanted to include Bosconian every single year,
I would do
that. That would actually be extremely funny.
Yeah, that'd be a good bit.
Especially if it was on different spots in the list. It's just you're waiting for it every time.
Yeah, like, where's the Bosconian hit this year?
And eventually it's like, I guess there's no Bosconian. Oh, it's number one this year.
It's game of the year. What's that say for everything else? 1982 still whipping 2025's ass.
1982, good year. Good year for gaming.
Yeah. All right. So, Rhett.
Oh, we're starting with me, huh?
Get us started.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Okay. I guess I'll just get it started. I wanted some head empty games this period.
Let's go.
Love me a good head empty game.
I started
bimboification art.
Oh my god! I feel I have these once in a while. You know, sometimes you just need to not think. Because I started the visual novel series that whose name I can't pronounce to Mask of Deception.
Utaware Rumano.
Utaware Rumano.
Oh my god.
Utaware Rumano.
We got Fuamoko over here. That's saying Fuamoko on my side.
Fuamoko Rumano.
Now you'd play that in a heartbeat.
Oh god. And he would remember it too. He could say it too.
Oh, there's twins in the new one too, but I haven't gotten to them. Oh my god. Yeah, I played a couple hours of that. Was like, this is good. I'm maybe a little hesitant on diving into the full two game back to back.
It's a big journey. Novel. I've been intimidated.
The third one is really long, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, hey, let's maybe play some head empty games. But then I was also watching the Nier Automata anime, and I was right about to finish that up, and they went, hey, what if we just tell you everything that happened in the first game that you haven't finished yet? And I'm like, oh no.
Why would you do that?
I guess that's in the... I mean, they kind of did do it in the game. It felt like the anime version was going into much more explicit detail, so I bailed out on an episode a few minutes in. Like, oh no, I know too much now. Fuck. So head empty game. I was like, okay, I've got one or two choices. Let's buy both and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Sonic Frontiers. Is it called Frontiers?
Jesus Christ.
I bought Sonic Frontiers. I think that's the name. And Ball Pit.
Uh-huh.
Ball God Pit damn, is the Rhett. New Vampire Survivors-like, but it's also mixed with like Ball Breaker stuff, Arkanoid.
Mm-hmm.
So I played 20 minutes of that, was like, this is pretty fun. And I played Sonic Frontiers and was like, oh, Jesus Christ. Why does he feel like this to... He's not a car. Yeah. Why do you turn like that? Why does this feel so bad to play? Because I've played a lot of Sonic Generations.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, no, I can't do this. I can't do this.
No.
He feels so bad, so I refunded that and then played 20 hours of Ball Pit.
I think that's ultimate justice in a way.
That was the correct move.
okay, that's good.
This game,
I can't believe that was the good end.
Yeah, no, that's a real good end.
Of those two choices, I do think this was the better one.
All right.
There's not a ton to say about this game. It is very stupid. It is profoundly stupid because it really kind of plays itself. Because it's just, you march up a column and you shoot balls. I mean, it may as well be automatic. There is manual shooting. And they do a weird thing where when you're firing, you walk slower. But if you just turn on automatic shooting, that means your movement speed is kind of inconsistent, which is really bad for a pseudo shmup. And like the bosses do get into some bullet hell territory sometimes. So it's like early on, it's like, okay, my numbers aren't strong enough. I can only get through like halfway the first stage. And this game does something really funny that I've never seen one of the, you know, roguelite or
vampire survivors do.
Specifically them is that in between stages, instead of like buying things from a menu, like with gold that you earn, there's a whole like city building simulator. So you purchase houses, and those houses will be like plus one strength for all characters.
Oh, geez.
So it's gamifying those menus and maybe
crazy.
Making that somehow just and as engaging a part of the gameplay loop.
It's just like Arknights.
Oh
geez.
God, that's crazy to think about.
Okay, here's the one part that Arknights probably doesn't do, is that when you buy like a new house, in order to like finish the construction, you have to send out workers. But the workers bounce around the map like pinball.
Like Arkanoid balls.
Yep.
Yeah. So you send them out to farm and they just bounce around the area. So you have to plan out how your houses are lined up in order to have them get hit. And you can pick everything up and move it between rounds. So it's not like you're locked in, but it's just so silly. And then the very, very late game ones are like plus one strength and you can upgrade it forever. So it gets into a little bit of our exponential
growth.
Yeah,
there you go.
It's the game that never fully ends, but it's like your growth is kind of linear, but the New Game Pluses get very, very crazy. Like, you're not, if you're on New Game Plus 22, probably, I don't think anybody's actually gotten that far.
Gotcha.
So the funny thing about this game is that it's like, it's very chaotic, and like, it kind of feels like it plays itself because the balls just go everywhere pretty much. Mm-hmm. And like, cause you're shooting like 10 balls at once, and it's just everything combos, like fusions and evolutions wise, everything works. Mm-hmm. There are specific like set ones, but then you can also just be like, poison and bleeding will just make poison X bleed. And it's like a ball that does both now. Like, it's just, and there's just numbers everywhere. It's very silly. And then what I didn't expect is that, so you've got the Vampire Survivors part, and you've got the farming kind of thing between levels with the town. Mm-hmm. The game gradually becomes an idler the further you get.
Yeah, yeah, this is the stuff that I've probably seen wild-ass videos of, where it's just like, okay, now you've reached the Vampire Survivor part of the game.
Oh, no, I mean literally, though. Like, not even just that you can just can AFK and play and just leave it, let it go on its own. It's that the town stuff will just have resources that are like, you'll get more every 6 minutes, like from harvesting trees or wood or whatever.
Literal idle mechanics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But then there's a character early on in the game that just picks upgrades themselves. I think, oh, that's pretty funny. And so I pick that character. You have to move him around. But then every time you level up, it just automatically picks one. And it's not just picking like from the left or option one every time. It's actually choosing. And it makes a bunch of evolutions I haven't even seen before. So I'm like, oh, it's pretty good at this. And then I get to the late game, and there's a character that is just full auto.
Oh, jeez.
As in, it picks the upgrades itself, and it also moves around the arena itself, and it dodges attacks, and it's just, oh, the game can play itself 100%. So it's just in full idle now. So there were times where for a while to clear out, because like to move on to each level, it's like, oh, you have to beat this one like 5 times, or not, maybe not that many, but like 4 times. Oh, I can get some clears an easy way with this character. Just set him to go for 15 minutes, play something else on the TV.
Are you just done like yet? Arc Knights, oh. Red.
Oh, jeez. I can't believe this is Arc Knights. I just haven't seen that in a Vampire Survivors to just like, yeah, it walks around its own and just beats the stages for you.
All right. Nintendo Super Guide, eat your heart out.
God.
Did you ever see that post? Did you ever see that text con tweet that's like, babe, what's going on in Afghanistan or something? And then the boyfriend responds like, LOL, don't worry about it, babe. And then they respond, okay, yay. And then you texting the character, hey, should I move you around or something? The character goes, don't worry about it. LOL, don't worry about it, babe. Okay, yay.
There are some attacks, it's really bad at dodging, so it dies sometimes. But for the most part, it was beating the stages, which was really funny. Some of the later upgrades are nuts, where it's like, oh, now you just have one that brings 2 characters at once, so you can level them twice as fast, and it combines their powers. Some characters will be like, oh, when the ball hits the back like of the arena, it immediately returns to you. Some have gravity applied to their balls. There's a turn-based character as well.
All right.
The only move is Arkanoid.
It's that the game will like move at double speed for like 3 seconds and then just stop, and you'll be allowed to move until you fire the ball. And then it waits until it bounces around, and then when everything is clear, the game proceeds for like another 3 seconds, and then it stops and lets you move around. I'm like, are you kidding
me? It's so funny.
It's so funny. It's so slow, though.
For those levels, that seems really long.
Because like, this isn't as long as the normal Vampire Survivors go. Like, they're around 15 minutes and there's faster options. Mm-hmm. But for him, that character, it's like 26 minutes. I'm like, oh, you're really... This is very silly. It's very funny. I'm not sure if the full auto character can also be combined with the turn-based character. But again, when you get into bringing 2 characters at once and one of them is just plays the game by itself, it's very funny, the synergies.
Yeah.
because it's all based on which characters have you beaten the stage with. But it's like, oh, you can just use this one to bring everybody through. Beautiful. And then, yeah, I beat the game about 20 hours, which is lower than the estimates I had seen. And I was like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do New Game Plus. I did
about the amount of time it would have taken to clear all of Sonic Frontiers, and I'm certain you had
absolutely picked the right choice here.
I could have played both. That would have been truly head empty.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Would Sonic Frontiers have been head empty? I think you would have just been too frustrated and angry for it to be head empty.
Well, okay, I thought it was going to be head empty. I mean, yeah, from the way John has described the open world stuff, once you get into it, it is just, ooh, rings, ooh, loop-de-loop, ooh, flashy colors, beat that guy up. Just
pure to-do list.
Yeah, checklist. Making numbers go up.
Here's some towers.
Yep.
It is funny of all of us that ended up playing that
John.
Game. It was my one AAA game of the year, Rhett. Did I have one this year?
That's what I'm saying. I don't even think you do that anymore. This is like the last one.
I think Tales of Berseria counts. And Pokemon Sun. I finished Pokemon Sun. Okay, Tales of Berseria, and I played Pokemon Sun.
Pokemon is such a weird one to call triple A when
it really is. When you consider those production values, it's especially really hard.
This is a 3DS one that John played.
Oh, okay.
Where it's also a decade old.
They're less than 10 years old. Tales of Berseria and Pokemon Sun, they're big studio games on major consoles that are less than 10 years old. That's AAA. I did the thing.
Yep.
AAA is so stupid because my definition is like, oh no, Japan like doesn't count. The budgets are not as nearly as insane as the Western
stuff.
Unless
you're talking like Squaresoft or something.
And yeah, I would say like Final Fantasy 16 would count.
Absolutely. There's like $100 million in that game.
I had like a second. I had like a 1 week window where I almost bought Final Fantasy 16. And I remembered how.
Looking at that game makes me bored.
I remember playing Final Fantasy 15, and then I was like, this looks like it's bad in all the exact same ways, except maybe
apparently it's bad in very different ways.
I mean, the fighting looks very different, and I think I would maybe have an okay time with it, but the story, everything about the story and setting feels like it irked me the same ways. Mm. Same ways.
Mm-hmm. I did see that on sale on Steam for like half off, and I had that moment of maybe. But for now, it's a no.
Stranger from Paradise is a much better investment, despite the fact that it is kind of repetitive. I keep hearing that that's probably like, you know, the true modern like Final Fantasy weird game that you'd want to play.
I mean, I would rather play that one.
That's on my list. So yeah.
Play another game. So I bought a Nintendo Switch couple months ago, and you know the thing about having new hardware is that you do want to use it.
Yeah,
you know, it's like that new shiny toy, and you're like, well, I may have not been interested in this game, but everyone's talking about it, the social media impressions are really good, came out recently. I've been playing Hyrule Warriors Age of Imprisonment.
Oh, there's been some discourse on this one. Interesting.
Did you think I was gonna say Kirby?
That's where I thought this was going in the Kirby direction.
I'm genuinely not interested in Kirby.
Air Ride, I played Kirby Air Ride earlier this year on Dolphin, and it was really fun.
I'm sure the new one's great if you're into it. I played the demo and was like, okay, it's a racing game, I don't really vibe with those.
I think that's fair.
I mean, this is like the most extra insane over the top racing game of all time for sure.
Yeah.
That was like hey, oh my god, This is a new AAA game that does look actually appealing, except playing 5 hours of Kirby Air Ride was like, holy shit, there is still so much more Kirby Air Ride.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I'm a ways off still. All right, continue.
So Hyrule Warriors Age of Imprisonment. This is the third Hyrule Warriors game.
Oh.
I played a little bit of the first one and bounced off it pretty hard.
Yeah, I did too.
And I did not play the second one. The second one is based off Breath of the Wild. The first one's just like a fan service thing.
Yeah.
Like it was to mix in characters from all the games.
Was the second one the one that was like the war that prefaced in Breath of the Wild?
So do we need to get into Zelda fucking stupid Zelda timeline stuff? Because it's both. It's 2 and 3 are about that.
What's 3 then?
No, 2 and 3 are that. 1 is just the fan service game.
Mm.
I get that. So, all right, so what's the difference between 2 and 3?
So here's the stupid fucking Zelda timeline as it exists right now.
Oh, man.
Which is to ignore all of the games except Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. So in Breath of the Wild, Calamity Ganon appears. They fight against him. That's Hyrule Warriors 2. They lose. Link goes to sleep for 100 years. And then wakes up, and that's where
Breath of the Wild is.
So,
they lose at the end of the second game.
Yeah, because he has to go to sleep for 100 years.
I bet that's really cool.
Well, that's not the one I'm played though. That's the game I have zero context for because I haven't actually played it. And then Tears of the Kingdom comes out and basically ignores everything that happened in Breath of the Wild. And there's a big mystery. These games are so fucking ridiculous because there's a different Ganon in this one.
Oh, jeez.
You know how with the Zelda stuff, it's usually the first game is like the very traditional Link versus Ganon Triforce stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second game always kind of suspends it. You got Majora's Mask. You have the Game Boy one. You have Zelda 2. Like, you know, the second game doesn't just do the same story again.
Right.
Tears of the Kingdom is more like Ocarina of Time than Breath of the Wild was, which was already extremely
Ocarina of Time-ish. Yeah.
Extremely Ocarina of Time. They just do a different Ganon. They make no mention of Calamity Ganon from the previous game. But anyways, so you wake up Ganon at the start of that game, and then Zelda disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole game is like a mystery to find out, where is Zelda? What happened? So I have to spoil the answer because it leads into the third Hyrule Warriors game, is that Zelda goes back in time to the founding of Hyrule.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if they ever give a year estimate. Let's just say it's 1,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's before all of the Calamity Ganon stuff in Hyrule Warriors 2. And then this game, so in Tears of the Kingdom, you never actually play as Zelda. You get a bunch of cutscenes of her in the past dealing with things, and then Ganon rises to power, and also, he wins at the end. and you may have thought, hey, this is a great opportunity to have playable Zelda, and they don't do it. But this is that game, finally. That's why I was interested, because Link's not in this one. The main character is Zelda and, like, the King of Hyrule.
Girls can be the hero, finally.
It's so funny, too, because the story they're telling tonally does not match with the Hyrule Warriors gameplay or, like, just this Dynasty Warrior stuff. Uh-huh. It's like, they're very self-serious. It's very, like, handled, like, you know, this is a grim war we're dealing with. And then you go into combat, and you're just doing combos, and, like, hundreds of moblins are flying through the air. Just armies that are in the scale of thousands, because you're, like, 100 KO, 200 KO, like, a minute later. Like, you rip through the fodder enemies in this, like, nothing.
Lawnmower simulator.
There you go.
But then it goes to cutscene, and they're just like, oh, we're overwhelmed. There's nothing we can do. Retreat. It's just like, dude, you are like fucking gods on the battlefield right now. 2 seconds ago.
You've literally mowed down 100 moblins in 16 seconds. How are we having problems?
It's weird because, like, you know, there's the fodder enemies, and then there will be like the big generals that take like a minute to kill.
Yeah.
And sometimes they look very, very similar. Like, oh, that dude has armor on and he's like 20% bigger.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to take like 100 times the firepower to bring down. So the gameplay is fun. I have warmed up to it a bit. At the first, I started on very hard, which was a mistake because I had bounced off Hyrule Warriors because I thought it was too difficult.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
But everyone in this one is like, everyone talking about this one is like, normal is too easy. Normal is like completely head empty.
That's complete. Way more head empty than you wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, give me a little challenge here.
A little spice.
So I've eventually switched to hard, which is the in-between. The thing about hard is that they're really, really restrictive on healing. Mm. You at the start of the game, you get three heals, like three rations that don't even full heal you for the entire mission. When some of these missions are taking like 20 minutes, it's a little dicey. So that is fun. I do feel like I really have to like prioritize not getting hit because you just don't have the backup and like mm-hmm. having to utilize your whole party.
Interesting.
Because story-wise, it's funny because they use a lot of the cutscenes from Tears of the Kingdom for the first half, and then the war starts, and it's like all new stuff.
Mm.
And they integrate that really well. But I think story-wise, like, yeah, it's a war. Not a whole lot has happened, though, other than like, oh, we need to gather the sages and then strike back against Ganon. Like, boom, there's your whole summary right there.
So what you're saying is that war never changes.
Yeah. I think they could have written the arcs of each region a little tighter and like done a little bit more with it. I think I'm near the end of the game because for a while I was like, well, we know how this game, how it goes from the previous game is that again, they lose at the end. Zelda even says it in a cutscene like, hey, Ganon is still alive in my time. I don't think this is going to go well for us.
So this doesn't really change original Zelda's fate.
Nah. Yeah. So I'm still unsure if there's going to be like a second half of the game where you're playing as like kind of the random, you get a lot of random characters that are just like dude with a shield or like veteran Sora with a spear. And like, they never show up in the story until one part right at the end. Where I'm at. So I'm like, are these characters ever going to be relevant or they just have like a 30 character roster for the hell of it? So I'll see.
Mm.
I'm.
Is this your first Musou game? I mean,
this is the like, first one I'm actually like.
Yeah, he's poked at the other two, but.
Mm-hmm.
I poked at Hyrule Warriors one and was like, eh. Because that one I felt like I was losing missions, not because I died, but because it was like. Your base got taken over on the other side of the map.
And your comrades weren't defending them properly.
Mm. Yeah, like, this has had none of that so far.
Interesting.
Where it's just like, take over the enemy base. Okay, now take over this enemy base. And they never strike back.
Right.
The last mission I was on seemed like I was about to fail from NPCs dying, but I was able to scrape it out.
Nice.
Because they're just because, again, this seems to be the end of the game where they're just like, hey, 30-minute combat gauntlet in one location go. I'm hell like yeah. Boy, everybody's getting really weak at the end and it's like giving me pop-ups like Captain Tom is low on HP, he's gonna die and that means you failed the mission. I'm like,
it's all fault, you're gonna be the one penalized.
It's like, yeah, I've been over here kicking ass for 20 minutes, do I see? But then I pull through and I'm like, okay, mission done. And then it spawns a boss and right before I'm able to heal and then it checkpoints. And I'm like, oh shit. Oh, and that's where the podcast started.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Because
I was at like 10% life on the boss and then I died. So it does restart you from there, but I'm like, I still can't heal.
Oh, no. This is a precarious situation that you literally just on the next episode of Rhett Plays Hyrule Warriors.
I mean, there was a moment on the podcast where I paused during the final boss of that Fire Emblem Persona spinoff game.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then I unpaused and beat it in like 15 minutes.
But the problem here is that like nobody's going to know the ending to this story until January.
Unless this makes my game of the year list.
There you go. That's the thing.
I mean, I won't necessarily say that it won't, but it's a strongly contested field right now.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't written a list that yet though, but I don't hate this game, but I don't think it hangs really in top 10.
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty fun if you're into
that whole Musou
stupid
thing.
Zelda lore.
Oh, and stupid Zelda lore, yeah.
because that was the hook for me. And then I'm just like, wow, this combat is silly.
Like, I've absorbed literally almost no Zelda lore in all the time that I've been playing video games. Like, all of those games to me are just self-contained things, and I do not think about the connective fiber between them unless it's like, you know, Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. Like, I was like, okay.
This game broke people when they go, oh, this is the founding of Hyrule.
Ugh.
So they were like,
I can imagine the shitstorm.
Eventually, I think what it was decided is that, no, it's a different Hyrule. It can't be put for every other single game.
Yeah.
Because, again, Wind Waker has Wind Waker has the World Flood, and then they go north, and then they found a new Hyrule in Spirit Tracks. Like, it's already been done before.
I thought Skyward is, like, one of the earliest ones.
Skyward is, I think, the actual first one still.
God.
Such a great game, isn't it?
Nintendo truly doesn't give a fuck.
No.
It's okay. None of the you don't have to worry about any of the games from the last 20
like
years.
They made that Hyrule Historia book just to fucking print money because they knew that there were nerds out here thinking about this shit way more than they were.
But then the next game, Breath of the Wild, was like the clean reset one where they just ignore everything anyways. I saw stupid timeline theories where they had all three branches pointing towards Breath of the Wild as like, and eventually time converges and all scenarios lead to this eventually. And I'm just like, that doesn't make any sense. That's not how anything works.
That's not how timelines work. Zelda. Thank you, Rad. Thanks for filling us in on the...
Yeah.
Still don't have anyone to tell us if the cute Zelda one is good, but...
Oh, the other one where you play as Zelda?
Yes. I mean, we have lots of friends that play that, but, you know.
I do have that. I mean, the core, I may play it.
Core 3 here. We gotta...
I know.
Gotta take.
No, I actually do have that. I bought it a while ago and never played it.
I barely resisted it. That game looked fun.
It looked fun. It looked perfectly lovely. I heard it was like 20 hours, and then I was like,
for John, 20 hours is too long. For me, I'm like, that's just right.
Yeah, I think that's sort of where I'm at. Like, I will take a nice 20 hour game and call it a bit of a jaunt.
That's like the one game that I was interested in that actually got a 60 frames per second upgrade on Switch 2. So nice. Like, okay.
Yeah, that's
good. I'll reward them for that.
Yeah, that's good.
Cool.
Kirby Star Allies, where you at? Astral Chain, where you at? Xenoblade X, where you at?
Oh, God.
They released that on Switch 1 like a month before Switch 2.
A month before Switch 2. Just the balls, man. The balls.
Apparently, there's like a dev 60 FPS mode in the code that you can't play on the actual hardware.
No.
And they haven't just unlocked it on Switch 2 because I don't know.
I don't know.
You're just like, you managed to find a way to still not be able to play Xenoblade X.
To buy it until they did an upgrade. So
once again, you are once again waiting for Xenoblade X.
Yep. On hands and knees.
I bet it would look really slick in 60 FPS, though.
Oh, for sure.
I bet it looks really good when you emulate it. Yeah, I wonder if you can emulate the Switch version and then use a code to turn it to 60 FPS.
I mean, that you know, you may be able
if
to enable it.
If that's actually in there, yeah. Polly, what have you been doing?
So, the last time we talked about a cute anime that I watched called City the Animation. And
that was
an absolutely lovely time. So me and Gosi just recently wrapped up Nichijo, which we jumped into that one pretty much right after finishing City. Despite us watching like the previous show first, like the style and the focus on humor was pretty much immediate. I think that both of those shows are they're immediately sort of analogous with one another, but I think like the big difference is that while Nichijo is also like a longer show with double the episodes, it's also much slower paced. Despite still being a show that has like a lot of rapid fire skits and gags, I think that like City is very good at depicting a very big city that's full of wild and absurd things and characters and stories happening all the time. And Nichijo, despite having things like a robot girl with a gigantic wind key on her back that stores cake in her arm, I think Nichijo is cool and cute in ways because it feels more grounded and quiet. Mm-hmm. It's a show where, like, it's hard to explain because it's very much in the same style of City, where it's almost a show about nothing, but mm-hmm. it is about something. Like it's very character driven. I think that like you there's not like an overarching plot that carries the whole show. It's just everybody has plots going on at the same time, and it's a show where it's just impossible to not like love every character. I think Nano
they're so nice.
Like Nano is. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, she steals the show because I think much of a lot more time is spent on her story than anybody else. But, but like, my favorites were probably, like, Aoi and Mio because they're cute together. They have this very clearly Manzai-inspired friendship with, like,
so cute.
Like, the funny man, straight man dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen this whole show, but I love Mio.
Oh, Mio! She was my favorite. Yeah, she was probably my favorite too.
She's just so much.
She's her swings are so wild. but this is one of those shows again where
all the yaoi jokes.
The yaoi jokes are so good. They go so far with them, and like her trying to like. Not let that secret get out, like losing one page of her manga and trying to keep, you know, basically beating up an entire city to keep it from getting out.
And a cop.
And that comes back later. It's
so fucking good.
It is a show that is just laugh out loud funny most of the times. I think that my favorite part of this show though is just how unbelievably sweet it is without ever coming off as
sweet.
Like saccharine or unearned. It never really feels like that. Its big emotional moments are all they're all pretty quiet and warm. City does this too, but it's in contrast to a show that's very high tempo and loud all the time. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Nichijo, when these little heartfelt moments occur, they just kind of feel like a deeper part of the fabric of what this show's kind of putting out there already.
Like you like that read?
Yeah. And my favorite moment was like this girl gets her heart broken. And, like, her friends, like, want to do something for her. And, you know, obviously, you think if it's an anime, oh, they're going to, like, do a big party and, you know, try to cheer her up. But all it ends up being, like, they just kind of end up giving her a slip of paper that's, like, a friendship forever coupon. And it just, that little moment just touched me. And then there's so many great moments with Nano and, like, what they're doing with her because she's a robot girl and she just wants to be a normal girl. Mm-hmm. And the way that she starts getting, like, ingrained with the rest of the cast just, oh, it's just so sweet and warm and gives you the warm fuzzies. In a world where we need a whole lot of warm fuzzies, I think Nichijo is just, like, a nice little hug. That gives you that nice little boost of energy. This is a show that's real good to watch in like two episodes at a time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is not a show you marathon. It's very similar to City, I think, where I would watch one episode of that at a time. Whereas with this one, me and Ghosty watched it two episodes at a time, and hey, it lasted longer too. So that was good. So. In the end, I think
it's really nice.
I
really, really, really enjoyed Nichijo.
Yeah, in the end, I think I do like Nichijo more than City. But that's not saying City's bad, even though the internet would say that. So, you know, like, I like Nichijo, so you hate City, huh?
They're both so beautifully animated in different ways.
God, they really are. You know, whereas City's, like, production values are off the charts, and they're just doing the most absolutely absurd shit. There's just a different vibe to how Nichijo is handling that stuff that I think just overall it's a show that feels maybe a little more together. And I think that it just being as grounded and slower moving as it is, with its longer runtime, lets it feel a little more comfy, a little more grounded. And I like that both shows just kind of like, they serve different purposes, but they're built from the same kind of burst of positive energy that's not overdone. Like, there's a very careful hand that you can have in writing like grimdark, but there's also a very careful hand you need to have in writing stuff that's like overly sweet and cute. And I think you can go way too far. And like, these shows, both of them are very good at riding that line of just having this perfect restraint before it ever feels like it's tipping over into, okay, guys, you're just kind of getting a little schmaltzy with it now.
That counts for so much.
It really does.
I completely get where you're coming from.
It really does. You know, I compare it to kind of like how I kind of bounce off of a lot of Yuri titles because I think that they're just too idealized and saccharine. Mm-hmm. And it just, I don't know. It just doesn't work for me. It might work for other people. God bless them. Hey, enjoy it. But I kind of like when there's a level of restraint with that kind of thing. I think that just kind of feels a little better. And I think that's what both Nichijo and City are just excelling at on all levels.
That's awesome. I'm so glad you had such a good time with both of these. I watched this one last year and it just hit me so good. So I made somebody like squeeing noise as you were describing it.
Just
so nice. It's such a nice, good thing.
Yeah, like, and I think Nichijou is also a show where it's just like, you're just kind of always giggling at something. You may not always be gut laughing at something, but there's always like, you just kind of always giggle because there's just some little thing or so the way somebody reacts to something that's just completely off the wall and catches you in a real good way. It's just a good little giggle show, I guess. You want to giggle? Who wants to giggle? Enjoy yourself. Have yourself a little giggle. I don't know why I would say
that. You want to giggle? Watch the show. If you want to marry Nano, watch the show.
Watch the show. Yeah.
If you don't want to marry Nano, why don't you want to marry
Nano? It's because you haven't watched the show.
It's because you haven't watched the show. Yeah. Yeah, she really does come off as like the perfect wife. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So we've taken a complete hard right turn here. The next thing I got up to was I got my hands on that brand new Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection.
I was trying to think of what would be a harder turn. That's a really hard turn.
From Nichijo to exploding heads. Let's go.
Fuck, that's funny.
Also a soft slice of life.
Yeah. A lot of slices of life in Mortal Kombat, really. I mean, Kung Lao will literally split your life down the middle, so.
Yeah.
Still the best fatality in the series. Literally just swipes his hat down the middle of a dude and he falls apart in half. It's still the best one. Still the best one. They've never topped it. Even with as over the top as modern Mortal Kombat is, there's nothing more effective than when I saw that fucking hat fatality the first time in the arcade and was just like, oh, you can do that in a video game? Holy shit. So the Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection is a new collection by Digital Eclipse, who are kind of like famous for these little collections. You got Digital Eclipse, you got M2, and M2 is kind of arguably the better side of this, but M2 largely also focuses on Japanese releases. So Digital Eclipse kind of ends up taking on a lot of these little kind of, I guess, emulation projects. It's preservation.
Wait, is there a relationship between Digital Eclipse and M2?
No, it's just,
okay.
No.
You're just kind of comparing them?
I'm just comparing them. So this comes with a whole truckload of games. You get arcade ports of MK1 through 4. You get an unreleased version of UMK3 arcade called WaveNet that was meant to have online capability. You get a not entirely complete collection of home ports across the SNES, Genesis, Game Boy, Game Gear. But there's like weird holes because there's a Game Boy version of MK1, there's a Game Gear version of MK1, but there's no Game Gear version of MK2 for some reason. There's just a lot of really weird omissions. Like, there's the SNES version of UMK3, but there's no Genesis UMK3. So what's up with there's some weird omissions. There's some weird omissions that happen here that is just like, I'm not sure why that's missing. That's weird.
I was going to joke about the Game Boy ones being on there, though, but the fact that they are is insane.
You know what? Yeah, MK2 on Game Boy is okay. Look, it's not a great Mortal Kombat game, but in terms of just like they didn't have a lot to work with, so they did the best.
They had a Game Boy.
They had a Game Boy, and they were told, take this honkin' 16-bit arcade game that's got fully digitized characters and make it a four-color Game Boy game that runs at 15 frames per second.
Oh my god.
Extremely funny.
But you also get the both MK Mythologies games on PS1, Sub-Zero and Special Forces. I still think that Sub-Zero is an interesting game. I don't think it's good. I think that it is a very interesting thing to have played through. And also I want to give them props for including like the most literal trash fire game I've ever played, Mortal Kombat Advance. If you have not played Mortal Kombat Advance, you have to try it. It is a remarkable piece of shit. Like, it is impressive. I know that we always joke about like, how did this get released? This is MK Advance literally feels like a proof of concept that isn't proving anything other than that we can make Mortal Kombat pictures appear on the goddamn Game Boy Advance. Because
so it's not a port?
It's not a port. It is a completely rebuilt thing that barely functions on any scale. It is so bad.
I think I looked at footage of this before.
You have to play it. You cannot just look.
Oh, you can't just look at it. You can't gotta feel it.
There is a, like I said, there is a remarkable level of shitty. It is so crazy how that got released in the state that it was in. So
I love hearing your Mortal Kombat journeys because you are so deep on this series.
Exactly. I'm big. Like, I'm the one they're aiming these at. So, you know, I've got a lot of history with early Mortal Kombat. So,
good.
And the big deal with a package like this is, of course, the quality of the emulation. And we're also talking like a huge swath of systems and emulators. So this is going to be like trying to juggle all of that. This is like something like 27 games or something like that across all these different platforms and arcade emulation. Like, and I'll just say, if you want to get in and enjoy some like good bloody fun and rip some heads off and whatnot, you're going to have a good time. Like, everything's playable. Everything's playable. If you are an MK purist, or you are anyone that's even slightly sensitive to things like input lag, you'll feel it. Like, again, I'm an early MK diehard, and I do notice the input lag, but I've still had a good bit of fun with the games. I think that, like, the important thing is they're still presented well. They still feel mostly right. Digital Eclipse, to their credit, they are working more on, you know, they are still applying patches to try and fix this stuff, but the game still launched with like the most bare bones online functionality that you can have. You literally can't, you can only fight against randos. There's no lobbies. There's no tournaments.
Oh,
it's really rough. It does have rollback netcode. But you know, again, like when you're also dealing with like input lag at the emulator level, and then you factor in input lag from playing over the internet, maybe you're not going to get the best results with the online package here. And it wasn't really much of a concern for me anyway. So yeah, like you got a good big bucket of games here that are all decently emulated, and I think that is. On at face value, it's fine. Like, you get 27 games. The collection's like 45 or 50 bucks. I can't remember. But just being a big bucket of games isn't the only thing that this is. Because it also comes with over 7 hours of video, featuring new interviews with all the key players that were there from the ground floor. And along with that, you get a lot of like design documents and scans and arcade flyers. There's like raw footage of actors in costume doing their moves and being digitized in real time. And like Ed Boon and John Tobias on set, like directing them. And you see how they split those actions into individual frames on this big ass computer they have.
Wait, now I actually want to get this. That's crazy. No,
this shit is really cool. Like there's one of the coolest moments is that they've got preserved is they're where you see them come up with Scorpion's spear attack completely off the cuff and film it.
Holy shit.
They were just like, wouldn't it be amazing. Cool? And that's the whole
That's so cool.
That's such a fun thing. That's such a fun thing that I love about this is that there's so much joy in the act of making the thing that they're making. So yeah, like you have that moment of like there's so many moments that like where the developers are talking about it. It's like, yeah, we were just sitting around and said, wouldn't it be cool if and then they just go do it. There's just so much freaking gold like that. And I think the best parts of this documentary feature is everything involved with the making of the first Mortal Kombat and the impact that it had. I think it's probably about like 40% of the content. Like, cause MK1 was a game made by five dudes just having ideas. And again, just saying, hey, what if we did this? And it's cool to see how all that comes together. And the cool part is also just seeing that all these years later, all those dudes still really like each other. And like all the video that you're watching of them that they recorded back then, and they are just having a blast making a crazy video game that they had no idea was ever going to become what it was. And I think that like a lot of that stuff, especially the MK1 stuff, I think a lot of indie devs could watch that and learn something from it. I think because there's just such a freewheeling spirit to that first game's creation, and even the second game largely, that comes across and that these guys come across as so genuine and wanting to just like, they come across as like high schoolers scribbling cool ideas in their notebook. And then, but they work at a cool video game studio so they can just go make that happen. Yeah.
That's crazy that there's all this footage from Mortal Kombat 1 because they didn't know it was going to be a big thing.
Yeah, they were just recording stuff as they went, and they kept archived stuff of like, you know, Richard DeVazio as Kano doing, you know, like they're trying to capture him doing a jump kick, but he's actually like sitting he's sitting on this box and he's just like leaning and sticking putting his leg out. And then you see Ed Boon go over and like take those frames, put them in the game and turn it into a jump kick. That shit is so cool.
I can't believe this stuff never came out till now.
There, a lot of it has, you can find
I've never seen it.
Because some of it has made it on to other Mortal Kombat releases, and a lot of it's come to YouTube, and some of it's just kind of been released from archives. But there's a lot of new shit in here that you've never seen before. Like, because as somebody that has indulged in a lot of Mortal Kombat media over the years, I'm that person that's seen a lot of that shit. And then, but they were showing me shit that I'd not seen in a long time. So, or I'd never seen. Is what I meant to say. I think that like the documentary stuff alone is worth the price of entry.
Yeah.
And I think that like just
compiling that much stuff.
And just the fact that you get, again, you just got 27 games like that. Sure. Maybe a little flawed and that hardcore players might find a little disappointing, but I think Digital Eclipse was really trying here. And I think the documentary.
I also, hardcore players also have plenty of other options. Yeah. You're already on, what's it called? Net. What's the net play option that everybody uses?
Fightcade.
Everybody, y'all are already on Fightcade. You already have your fucking Mr. setup or whatever.
Yeah. Like,
you're good.
Does Fightcade support the Game Boy?
Yes, I think it does, actually.
It probably does.
But like most of us, that like have these games or are used to playing them on things like MAME or stuff where the emulation is a lot tighter, like I'll probably stick to that, you know. But in terms of like a collection that I think is really shooting for the stars here and trying some act of preservation, some act of archival, and clearly has a lot of love for the material. This isn't just like a pump and dump like compilation where we threw some emulators on and that's all you get. Because there's obviously a lot of those out there. But this obviously isn't it, because you know, they tracked all these dudes down again and got so many really great new insights from guys that are 20 plus years out from the creation of these games. And I think that like that stuff, like you don't go grab that stuff if all you're just looking to do is, you know, if you're up, all you're doing is just looking to cash out on the name. So I got to give props to Digital Eclipse. You know, even if it's flawed in the ways it is, I would still give them money for it, just because I think that there's a lot here beyond just the games. And if you don't really mind the little problems that come up with these games sometimes while you're playing them, you're still going to have a good time, because guess what? Mortal Kombat's still really fun.
Mortal Kombat still rips.
Your head off.
Position of the pod.
So cool. Yeah,
I always love hearing you talk about Mortal Kombat, because it's just obviously it's something I like, and something I care about a bit. And then you've just been plugged in on this world your whole life, and
yeah, like I
have this investment,
you know,
and have this knowledge.
I was there when MK1 and 2 hit arcades, and MK3, you know, I was really big into my local scene playing Mortal Kombat 2 for a long time. And
fuck yeah.
You know, like I one of my favorite gaming stories ever is like me ending up with a copy of MK2 on SNES the day it came out. Like, there's a fun story behind that that means a lot to me. So yeah, Mortal Kombat is just kind of embedded in me in a way that it's always going, like, even if like I don't really like where it's at now, I'm not going to play those games anymore. I still have these games over here that I think are just a wonderful point in time, and I think that they still hold up. There's a reason that people still play UMK3 online competitively, because there's still meat there. It's not Street Fighter. It's not trying to be. It's its own unique and fun thing that I think that has had the impact it has, because I think that the spirit behind it just comes through in what they did in those, especially those first three games, of just dudes wanting to make cool shit and just like, yeah, and just always asking what if we, and then doing it. So that's Lord. All I've been up to.
It's just crazy that in the 90s, five guys made this game and then upended Street Fighter for a while.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Like, the whole industry kind of at the time, because it was so focused on arcades. The whole port of MK1 being this huge controversy.
Yep.
Because Genesis had the blood.
Yeah.
Like, it even bled into console war stuff.
There's even console stuff that there from the companies that did those ports, where like the dudes from Sculptured Software are just like, you know, like, we had a programmer who didn't understand like this part of MK's code, so he rewrote it in a real shitty way, and that's why and that's why the SNES version of MK1 has like 12 frames of input lag.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
I think they even named him too. Dude seemed real hot about it.
Funny. Oh, that's funny.
He's still bad 30 years later.
I would be. Like, despite the fact that the SNES version of MK1 was never going to, it was always going to be hamstrung by the fact that it didn't have the gore, but the fact that it also just plays like utter dog shit doesn't help.
He was a Sega plant.
All right, but that's all I've been up to. John, you are the last.
Yeah,
you're the last regular segment of the year.
Goodness gracious!
Goodness! What you got?
Goodness. So last time we talked about short game era, short story, short game. I spent all of October just like eating up a million things. I think I finished Arzette after the last podcast.
Lovely game.
It was so cute.
That game's so pleasant. That was the first game I played this year, and I came out of it with just the biggest smile on my face.
It's and just then you've been nice. On a quest to find one game better.
I played a little more long short game era after that. I played Terry Kavanagh's Egg when it dropped. Mm-hmm. Fucking delightful.
What is very, that? I got like
it's a 10 platformer. It's a platformer.
I thought it was Jump King at first. I didn't realize
it's
you could
not
just walk.
It is not a getting over it.
well, like, I was playing it like one.
It you get checkpoints and you get shortcuts, mm-hmm. and it is firmly not a getting over it, like, okay. which I was very pleased to see because mm. I was playing it like, oh, this is fun. I'm not sure if I'm ready for a whole getting over it type arc. And then now it's just a fun platformer. There's a lot of like little things it does to be really smooth, mm-hmm. kind of smooth out the, it's a game where you jump around as an egg and it has like weird physics that you have to get used to. Weird physics and controls. So that's the kind of getting over it comparison. Mm. But the structure is just very nice. And there's a lot of little subtle ways that it's very forgiving to the player and smart that I really appreciated. Mm. I think I played the whole thing in like an hour and a half. So that's a nice one. Love it when Terry just drops a freeware banger.
Yeah. I think his last one didn't quite land for me. Platform.
I'm aware. Platformer. Remember that fucking stream.
Yeah.
I mean, remember turning it off. Like, what bugs up her butt?
I get it. It's just a simple platformer. It's just Mr. Platformer. He was learning Godot. I get it. But it felt like a game that he
was. Response. I was just like, "Holy shit, Polly!"
It felt like a game.
Why is this hitting you so wrong?
Sometimes it just be like that. It was just, but my only question, you know, it was just this felt like a game made by somebody that was learning to use a new engine. That's kind of just what it felt like to me.
Yeah, I totally get that, and the kind of narrative promises that you get at in the last area don't really pay off at all when you clear the whole thing. Yeah. So I completely got it. I'm sorry for
you got,
coming at you, you so strong.
You
there.
Got it, but you were still real pissed off.
I was still just like, oh my God.
Get some taste, bitch.
I liked Egg a little more than Mr. Platform. It felt more holistically considered. Mm-hmm. In terms of like, it didn't have any like dangling threads like Mr. Platformer did, I think.
Sure.
I played Superliminal.
I know this one.
Yeah.
Wait, oh no. Oh no, John. John didn't mention this on like Beat Blue Sky or anything.
Mm-mm.
Brad, I didn't like Superliminal. I'm sorry.
That almost made my top 10 the year it came out. Or the year
oh,
later.
Man.
Oh my God.
This game's so fucking.
So.
This game's so up its own ass, Rand. I'm sorry.
I cried at the end.
You cried at the end? Oh my God. Fucking Jonathan Livingston Seagull ass. Self help bullshit. fucking oh cult leader ass. New wave.
Oh my God, John! Red's already dead.
No, it's fine. I'm not upset.
It's fine. It's just like it's sappy in a very specific way that like really irks me. Where it's I'm trying to think of there's like a specific person that talks like I can't think of the name. There's a specific genre of like. Hippie stuff, self-help, mm-hmm. that really grinds my gears.
Yeah.
So the ending really, really got to me. Besides that, I just feel like this is like Antichamber. I feel like everyone played Antichamber and was like the illusion stuff is cool. Mm-hmm. But really, this is just like a block puzzle game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you get the block shooting gun and then you can do a bunch of block puzzles. And mm-hmm. the illusion stuff is generally kind of secondary to that. Mm-hmm. Superliminal like goes all in on the illusion stuff, but then doesn't really have puzzles or mechanics. You're just kind of like walking through these like cool, like
cool effects, and they're all.
Oh, experience.
Microphone, like, yeah, your microphone shit out there for a second.
Ah, sorry. They're all really cool. It's a cool effect. It was a cool experience. It's short enough too that you really can't feel bad about engaging with it, especially when every space is so like handcrafted and love done.
Right.
But yeah, just really, really, really irked me. Grinding my gears.
Dang.
And that just about put a damper on short game era. I did.
Oh my god, Rhett, you almost killed an era.
I didn't recommend this at all. John just found this one.
I started a Saga Frontier route afterwards.
Jesus Christ.
Played it to the end, had a fucking great time. Saga Frontier rips.
Of course, that Amelia's makes sense. Route. That makes sense.
What's the
played Amelia's route?
I was gonna say John went from like out of the dish into the frying pan or something.
Well, it only takes like 5 days, especially on the remaster version where you get the double speed battles.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
A route is a quick little nice little supper of RPG.
Yeah. Trying to spark attacks. Not so bad when you got 2x speed.
Nah. And besides, you don't, I have never like tried to force sparking attacks. I've rolled with what I get, and I've never had any problems.
Sure.
I've cleared 4 of the routes now.
Nice.
I do tend to grind in the biolab for like
an hour. The biolab is the grind spot in that game.
Yep. That does the trick. I think I overdid it this time because I crushed the final battle. But yeah, it's just another cute story. I just really like Saga Frontier. I feel like if you approach it as like I'm going to sit and play all 7 routes in a row, I think the amount of repetition and common content between the routes is going to be way too taxing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's better appreciated more like kind of an evolution of the Romancing Saga structure. Like Romancing Saga wants you to replay it because there is a lot of like ways playthroughs can go differently, and the different characters do have different starting paths generally.
Mm-hmm.
But the games are like 30 hours long. Like you don't want to replay them. Like
no,
yeah, replay them regularly. I feel like Saga Frontier's deal is like it's a sort of a mini like 8-hour Romancing Saga arc. Like you're squeezing that same basic arc of getting to 800-ish HP and getting stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And they're adding so much extra content between the different routes that it's sort of like trying to invite you to replay it more and kind of get making that more palatable. So I think it's not quite the kind of game where it's like, yeah, just play them all back to back. But I think it's more like the game is inviting you to experience that arc in a number of different ways and see like cool different stories in the context. I really like that all the routes have their own final bosses. I think that's really nice. Yeah. I think this is the most straightforward fun I've had with across these routes this year and earlier. The most straightforward fun I've had with like open world Saga.
Mm.
I really, really like it. I get to do the gay vampire route next.
That one's so good.
Uh-huh. And then the only ones left after that are the monster route and then the route where there's no story.
There's a lot of really good Acellus fan art out there if people want to go looking. Acellus is an amazing, amazing design. We love her to bits. Even when I didn't like Saga Frontier growing up, man, did I love Acellus.
Mm-hmm. And that she's the one route where they added more story content.
And that is one of the main reasons I like kind of want to like take another swing.
It's so chill. Like honestly, I think the most scary thing was Saga Frontier. Monsters still don't make sense, so that's always
I mean that is a saga given.
That's a saga staple, but you don't generally have to make too much use of them.
Get out your number one
scariest the number one scariest thing about Saga Frontier is navigating those maps.
Oh God. Like the art is beautiful, but actually the art is beautiful, but actually navigating through that game's spaces is impossible sometimes.
They're really taxing. And the one time I remember looking when I played P26 or G's route on PS1, I think the only time I had to look at a guide is because there was just a piece of interactable terrain I didn't notice.
Did they not add the Final Fantasy VII, like, here, like, because in Final Fantasy VII...
Exactly.
I thought that's what I meant, was that the remaster...
Yeah. That's the scariest thing, and the remaster smooths over that optionally by just having arrows over everything, that every exit. Mm-hmm. And that just means I can focus on enjoying the ROM Saga arc. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the ROM Saga arc of fighting a bunch of monsters and slowly getting stronger and stronger and stronger. It feels really good. And then finding a really hard final boss. Mm-hmm. It's just one of my favorite little RPG textures, and Saga Frontier is just an invitation to live in that for many, many, many playthroughs.
Yeah, that's real cool.
Yeah. Polly. Got one more RPG, because short game era is over.
Short game era is over.
You know what's You know what's not a short game?
What is not a short game?
I picked back up my Etrian Odyssey playthrough.
Oh boy. I remember this journey starting, and then when it kind of stopped, mm-hmm. I was just wondering, is this kind of just like, did he just kind of get a taste? Did he just get enough? You know, was it good enough? But it's like, yeah, I like this, but it's just like, it's like Butterfinger cake. I only want to have one piece a year.
I'm not quite in the mood for the whole, I had the whole conversation with myself. I told myself, I'd finished the first stratum of Etrian mm-hmm. Odyssey in like 4 days, and that first stratum is fucking awesome. It's such a strong opening to that game, mm-hmm. Where the dungeon is really scary and you start with really small numbers and the enemies are really scary, and you slowly map things out. The FOEs are introduced, and you got FOEs that are terrifying that you don't want to touch. They'll kill you, and you got FOEs that you can just barely make it past. So you clear out the ones that are in your way. And then if you wait three, if you rest too much, then they come back. That's mm-hmm. you're managing that. You're finding shortcuts to make the walkbacks less demanding. You finally get the wire rods that let you warp out.
I think that like FOEs kind of added a really cool element to what you're typically doing in dungeon crawling. Is, you know, you're learning to, it's traversal technique, you're trying to like learn your, you know, like I think that's something like FOEs added, where like they're basically traversal puzzles where the punishment is, oh God, I'm probably gonna die.
So fucking good. And there's a lot of little ways the game is forgiving, like you can run for most FOEs. If you get a number of classes, get a flee ability that's, you sacrifice a bunch of HP and then retreat to the previous floor, mm-hmm. which can also cut down on your traversal time sometimes. Mm-hmm. So the FOEs are Etrian Odyssey's like big idea.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That's the thing about the game. And cause it's a perfect form factor fit for the DS, cause you're drawing your map. That's lovely. That's mm-hmm. a great hook. But then the FOEs are there on the map, and they're visible at all times, and or at least, you know, if you have the right ability and or you see them or whatnot.
Yeah, it's very fair. Like, I think that the FOEs are very fair the mm-hmm. way that they're implemented. You're not going to typically get jumped by one because, you know, either on first contact or whether you have an ability that just senses them on the floor as you mm-hmm. move around, you see their movement patterns, and that's where the traversal puzzle kind of comes into play.
Mm-hmm. At least until later on when they start ambushing you in dead ends.
Yeah, okay, dead ends. The dead ends are real mean.
The dead ends are really fun. And even then you're like, oh God, oh yeah. God, oh God. And then you're like, okay, I can use my flee ability. I can warp out.
Just flee out. Maybe
I could heal up and I could try to make, just bash my way through. It's such a good oh shit moment when the FOE spawns behind you while you're walking into dead end.
Well...
There's usually really good treasure to make up for it.
Oh yeah, there is. Yeah,
it's a good moment. And then the stratum boss is like the really big idea is that bosses and FOEs can interact.
Yes, that's
it, that you can have an
you can have them both on screen at the same time.
And the way that because I just didn't consider that. I didn't consider that could be a possibility, and that, so of course I completely ate shit.
Yeah, when that happens the first time, it's one of your golden Etrian moments when you learn that mm-hmm. FOEs can and will jump into Stratum boss fights.
So good.
And after that, I just completely fucking stalled out.
Yeah.
I made it over like a month. I got like three floors deeper and I was just not in the mode for it.
Mm-hmm.
I put it down. You know, I had my whole short game area. I got married.
Yep.
And God, I think I played all of Pokemon Sun after I start. I played all of Pokemon Sun after I started Etrian Odyssey.
Jeez.
Watched a lot of the anime. Still on that journey. And I just wasn't feeling it. And I just had that moment where I was like, all right, it's been like a month and a half since I even touched this. Am I feeling this? Do I just need to put this down? Wait two, probably more like 5 years. Try it again from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll play Etrian Odyssey 4 next time. I really vibed with that one. Maybe that's the one for me. Maybe that's the one that'll pull me in. And I said, I stared in the mirror and I was like, do you want to keep playing Etrian Odyssey? I was like, no, I don't.
No.
And then I woke up the next day and then I pulled out the DS and I started playing Etrian Odyssey. And I was like,
this is exactly right. This is exactly what I want.
Polyed the shit out of that game.
And it wasn't even like, oh, I hate this shit, I'm out. It was, I'm just not feeling
this
it.
Isn't
I
even where told I'm Brad, at.
I was like, sometimes you just aren't feeling a game, even if you know it's good. What sometimes when you get married, you get one get out of jail free card where you can just drop something, even
yes.
if you think it's good.
Yeah.
You're just not feeling it right now. That I fucking mainlined that game for 2 straight weeks.
Yes.
I didn't do like I got obsessed. I was deep in the dungeon.
When the dungeon crawler finally sinks its hooks in and it becomes comfort food and you're just getting cozy with it
uh-huh.
every evening,
uh-huh.
best feeling in the world.
It feels so good to get obsessed with an RPG, Polly. Mm-hmm. It felt so right.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got through like 10 floors in like a long weekend. I think I had a Friday off and
wow.
I got through like 10 floors of Etrian Odyssey.
That's so much mapping.
Uh-huh. I got to one floor with one-way tile floors because mm-hmm. the fourth stratum is where the tiling puzzles get mean.
Oh, yeah.
You have Pokemon sliding tiles
mm-hmm.
and the in-game map is not equipped to let you map those out.
No, it's not.
So I pulled out graph paper.
Yes! Dungeon crawler's best friend.
Mm-hmm. I got to the boss of Stratum 4, which is the other Stratum boss that incorporates the FOEs in a really, really cool way.
Mm-hmm.
The theming of the fourth Stratum is also crazy because mm-hmm. you're just there. There's this whole society that is organized against trying to stop you, and you are plowing for deeper and deeper and deeper as their resistance escalates, and as you get like the most weird esoteric mapping puzzles in the game. Like there's a maze of one-way hidden doors.
Oh God, I know what. Oh God, yeah, feel that one in my blood.
None of it is too overwhelming.
It is enough to push it and just kind of put you on the back foot like, oh, man.
Mm-hmm. There's one floor that's just like the entire map is one big open space.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the exit almost immediately. And then I was like, do I want to map out the rest of the floor? That's, you know, like the 300, 400 tiles or something. It's like I've got a lawnmower in my way across this entire fucking
yep.
map and filling all those blue squares.
Yep.
like, ah, I always need to grind a little bit before the stratum bosses. I'll just do that now. So I got to, so the whole fourth stratum was just this ordeal, and I got to the boss and I cleared out a bunch of the surrounding FOEs. I finally fought the boss and it just destroyed me, even with clearing out that previous area. It just wrecked my shit. And I was just like, oh, and it was a full 3 hours. It was like one long evening between fighting that boss for the first time and then successfully clearing the fourth stratum. Because of the nature, because the boss was really hard and mm-hmm. I needed to get stronger, because I needed to make some changes to my build, and because of the way that the FOE puzzle is shaped.
Yeah.
In a certain way meant that I had to approach things very differently, and it was very demanding.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's kind of my big observation with the game, is I feel like the fourth stratum is kind of the real climax.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The fifth stratum felt like they give you the big reveal.
Yeah.
The big story reveal, like right off the bat, they have the big like set piece boss.
Yep.
At the start of the stratum.
Right there.
And then you just kind of map it out for 3 more hours. And then the last boss is pretty, like, it's cool. It's cute, but it's only one form. And I beat it on my first try.
Yeah, it's surprisingly easy.
Mm-hmm. I think there's an argument that it might have been better to hold off on the big reveal and maybe that other big set piece boss until closer to the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But it basically worked for me. It's like, I had this amazing RPG climax, and then I had this wind down of like, okay, mm-hmm. I have proven my resolve mm-hmm. to see the mystery through to the end, and now I just need to actually see it through.
Yeah.
So it still worked for me. I still left it very satisfied. I could see it irking someone who's like really hyped for like a big epic like strange mm-hmm. journey finale or whatnot.
Yeah, that's but not what you're getting. No.
Nah. There's also a post game, and I'm too scared.
The post game in Etrian, like, I don't typically engage in post game content in any game I play because I find that most of it just involves mm-hmm. a level of grinding that I'm just not built for. And mm-hmm. so I've never really done an Etrian Odyssey post game, but I know people that have, and I've watched them mm-hmm. do it, and it's a lot of it is very tedious, even if it leads to some incredibly crazy hype moments. To me, it's just the mm-hmm. amount of grinding and sometimes the level of specifications, so the way you have to kind of like reset characters and then re-level them to kind uh-huh. of do so. I'm not into that. Like, I've literally never reset a character in an Etrian Odyssey game because that is just not a mechanic. Like, I don't want to, like, because it's usually called rest, and you rest your character mm-hmm. and you either lose 10 levels, but you can reallocate skill points, or you can reset back to level 1 in some later games, I believe, and redo your whole build, but you actually get more skill points for doing so. Mary Skelter also mm-hmm. has a similar system where you can do blood devolution and the same thing. So, but you usually in Etrian and other dungeon crawler post games is they typically want you to do that and really just kind of respec for some of the challenges that are there, because they're built in such specific mm-hmm. ways that sometimes, you know, they weren't having to think about these as being a part of the main game. So they were just kind of having fun, is usually how I look at yeah. that kind of stuff.
It makes sense to me that, like, if you're going to have all these systems, you want kind of the Kaizo
yeah.
ROM hack yeah. follow up that is going to push people to.
And that's the spirit of that.
Experience all the nuances.
That's the experience that I think that post game Etrian typically offers.
Mm-hmm. I this game's 25 goddamn floors, Polly.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge.
I was done. I was tired. Yeah, I didn't want to play anymore.
Like, that is,
I think
that is how I feel at the end of every dungeon crawler that I've ever played. I love the genre to bits, but when I reach credits in one of them, I typically feel like, all right, our time together was sweet, but it is now time for us to part.
I am done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had my fill. I think I demonstrate, I'm trying to grow my stamina for RPGs, because there's so many, like, experiences that require like kind of approaching the games with more patience, and not being quite as like, maybe not being driven. Like, cause I grew up like Chrono Trigger. Like yeah. that's mm-hmm. my, that was my benchmark. That was my like baseline was 20 hour crazy roller coaster game where everything is happening.
That is the antithesis of most RPG and dungeon crawler experiences.
Exactly. And I like that. I like deep dungeons. I like having to worry about my resources. I like hitting a hard stratum boss and being like, you know what? I'm going to grind for a little bit. I'm going to rethink things. I'm going to come at it from a different angle. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy these items. And then I see my plan through and it works and it feels great.
That's always the best feeling in a dungeon crawler,
such
too.
Such a good feeling.
Because I think with dungeon crawlers, and I think the thing that makes a lot of people wary of playing them, especially games like Etrian, mm-hmm. where you're making hard commits every time you spend a skill point. God, like, that is very yep. scary. But I think the thing is that, like, with Etrian, it's designed in such a way, and they're usually designed so smart that, like, you're going to struggle, probably, if you make some bad decisions. But I've never had a point in any Etrian game where I've had to start over because I fucked up so bad. Because I think, ultimately, most of the skills that you're buying into are going to... may not completely... The full picture may not be there when you invest that skill mm-hmm. point, but when you look at the way abilities synergize and especially with later games where, you know, you start multi-classing and seeing how things synergize, and it's like, oh, the picture starts coming together a lot more. And so those early investments that feel very scary end up often producing a lot of very, very good fruit at the end of the road.
Mm-hmm. There's one like really taxing skill where I needed to like learn axes and swords, and I hadn't mm-hmm. put any points into axes.
Yep.
And I was like, all right, this is like 8 points I've saved up. I don't know if this skill's going to be worth it. And I bought and I sank them all into axes. I sank all the points I needed to unlock the skill. And then it carried me the rest of the game. It was so goddamn good.
And that's the best feeling. Again, like when a plan comes together, when your party starts synergizing and feeling good, like when you've got like follow-ups and shit and chains going on, it's just like, oh, whether through my own big smart brain or me just like press a button and give me point, let's see what it do. You know, I think ultimately there are probably bad teams out there that you could put together if you purposefully tried to just make a team that can't win. But I think ultimately in a casual experience, I think that any player could probably see most of those games through because I think they're just built for it. It's just
you just
have to change your approach. If you're you could go look up strategy guides with optimum team performances mm-hmm. all day long if you want, but I just don't think that those games require it. I think that with nearly any build, with time and investment or just thinking your strategy through or thinking about your abilities in a different way, it's just typically how I feel the most rewarded when playing Etrian Odyssey and other dungeon crawlers.
Mm. I completely agree. All vibes with me. I think that the big thing I want to get across is like, I talked about like raising my stamina, like, these games aren't homework. No. These games aren't like, they're not even like, that you're not playing them to become a better person or whatnot.
No,
I'm playing this because it's really, really chill. Mm-hmm. And it feels good to be deep in a dungeon crawler. It feels good to map out mazes. It feels good to get stronger, mm-hmm. to see your characters get stronger, to beat an enemy that kicked your ass an hour ago. Like,
going back to another floor and fighting the FOEs and being able to win, mm-hmm. like, that's one of the best feelings.
It's really nice brain candy.
Yeah, I was literally thinking brain candy.
Like, I feel like there's a little bit of an understandable movement right now in game spaces, kind of looking at, the Balatro likes or the Vampire Survivor likes or whatnot, and kind of seeing a resistance to like dopamine dispenser games.
Yeah.
It's because like, games have gotten so refined at that shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like it does start to be a little too obvious when
That's what doesn't feel good to me is when I can it's very transparent that I'm being manipulated.
Yes. Yeah. Even like something like the Hyrule Warriors where you do like a 3-hit combo and 100 enemies die.
Yeah.
Like, okay, game. I didn't really earn that.
I feel like for me, and I think for you, Polly, like it's not that I'm against games being like long form, sit with this experience for dozens of hours and make my brain feel good.
Right.
It's that I think that there are experiences like Etrian Odyssey or whatnot that get me there with like a minimum of, they don't have to fucking massage my ego to get there. Yeah, they don't have to flash a bunch of things on the screen. They get there with a minimum of moving parts. They're very elegant and restrained and they don't feel like they're just trying to jerk me off.
Yeah.
And that's all I need to just sink into filling in mazes and getting stronger. And
the brain candy comes naturally.
Yeah. I think it's the same. I think like arcade games are, you get a similar thing from like old school dungeon crawlers and old school arcade games. Yeah. They are really nice brain candy because they're not cloying about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely it.
Mm-hmm. I had one more like kind of related game. I'm running long already.
Oh,
I can talk about it next time.
Okay. You want to talk about it in January?
I could talk about it now if y'all aren't too tired.
Are you going to finish this game or not?
Etrian Odyssey? Questron. Oh yeah. Yeah. No. I'm finishing it like tomorrow.
Oh, I thought this was the one you dropped.
No, I dropped it in a night. So I've been wanting to play. I'm going to breeze through this because I'm running long.
Mm-hmm.
I've been wanting to play Apple II Commodore 64 dungeon crawlers for ages, ever since I played Wizardry on DOS and then discovered that that game fucks up the stat gains, so you lose as many stats as you gain on level up. And that's not true on Apple II. There's stat losses are much rarer and you do actually get stronger as you level up besides just HP.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, I need to stop being afraid of emulators in our DOS box.
Yes.
And because I played Fantasy on DOS.
Yeah.
And Fantasy 1 got a DOS port. Fantasy 3 got a DOS port. Fantasy 2 did not get a DOS port. That's only on Apple II and Commodore 64 and Amiga and a bunch of other things. But it's not on DOS. Mm-hmm. It's like, I knew that going into Fantasy 1. Why didn't I play it on Apple II or some shit? Because I was scared of different emulators. So, Questron is a riff on like Ultima 1. It's a single character game. The numbers, the systems are very straightforward. And I played it for like 4 or 5 days. And I mapped out the overworld and I explored all the towns and wrote down what was in each town. And I couldn't figure out how to progress and got frustrated. I read the manual, of course. And I said, I'm done. This is too much. And then the next day I got up and I tried a couple things and then immediately just like completely cruised through most of the rest of the game. Like I figured out all the progression. It felt amazing. I had a king telling me, you are now the most powerful knight in Questron. Now you must go to Mantron's land of evil.
Mm.
And I bought and I found the boat. I figured out how to blow away the fog. And it all felt really, really good.
Nice.
So I spent all of yesterday mapping out the first dungeon. I think of three, because you don't find any of the first person dungeons until like the second half of the game. There's no dungeons in the first half.
That's really crazy.
It's really funny. The really funny thing is that your numbers start off like, oh, you have 50 HP and 50 gold. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the first half chunk of the game, you're at like 20,000 HP and 20,000 gold. Like your numbers go crazy. And then you get to the land of evil and you start fighting the enemies and traps are dealing like 1,000 damage and you're getting 1,000 gold from treasure chests. They just like make your numbers go insane. So you feel like this super badass.
Yeah.
And then when you get when you get to the actual meat of the game where there's actual dungeons, the monsters are just strong enough that that's no longer in all of those numbers.
Oh, that's crazy.
So I'm having a ball. I'm almost done with mapping out the second dungeon now. And I already know where I think the final dungeon is after this. So I'm hopefully going to kill Mantor after this. The manual presents the story in the form of like three or four letters written by characters in the world. Mm-hmm. So you read like, the Baron John's letter about the rebellion he planned. And then you read the knight's letter after Baron John was executed. And then the wizard, one of the wizards says, wrote a letter. And then the princess wrote a letter about how her knight was killed and how she hopes one of the serfs can rise up to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all adorable. It's all so fleshed out. It's crazy for 84. I mean, yeah. Ultima 3 was already crazy for 83. Mm-hmm. But this is humbler than Ultima 3. But it's also smaller in scope, so I feel like it's less overwhelming. Right. Like 3 8-floor dungeons that take like 2 hours each is less scary than 10 8-floor dungeons that take like 2 hours each. Yeah,
for real.
Especially when they're like, unlike Etrian Odyssey or a more modern game, they're pretty empty in this era.
Mm-hmm.
You're just kind of mapping out the maze and finding
monsters.
Just
doing a maze and finding boxes.
Yeah. That's fine. This was the first 5 years of PCRPGs being a thing.
This is pretty good for the infancy of computer gaming.
It's pretty good for the infancy for computer gaming. It's like crazier than Dragon Warrior in a lot of ways. It's certainly crazier than like Draga or Dragon Slayer or Hydlide, which were its Japanese PC counterparts or PC Arcade. So I'm having a ball. I have so many other like Apple II era games that I would really like to sink my teeth into. I've got Bard's Tale. I've got Mind Magic.
Mm-hmm.
But those games are a lot bigger. They're really long. Mm-hmm. But if I'm strong enough to finish Etrian Odyssey, maybe I can get into, the goal isn't, I need to beat these big challenges. It's, I want to get in my nice, warm RPG flow state with Mind Magic, because I think I can get there. I think that they were doing it already back then. It's not as, like, clean as Etrian Odyssey, but a lot of it is there. So I'm really excited to continue that journey. I haven't touched a CRPG in like over a year.
Very cool.
So I'm excited. Next time we're talking, it's game of the year.
Yeah, the next time we're together.
Our podcast. Oh boy.
Yeah. Also, I would like to give a special acknowledgement to the recent passing of a Rebecca Heinemann as well.
Absolute
legend. In game development, she made so many ports possible and did some absolutely amazing things. And if you've never heard her tell the story of having to port Doom to 3DO, you absolutely need to
watch it.
You need to go to YouTube and watch that right now. It is the wildest roller coaster of one person having to create a miracle in a mere 10 weeks with nothing. It's absolutely insane.
It's such a story.
Big salute to her. She was an absolute legend. And she was just incredibly charming. Incredible. Like, I loved listening her to just talk about anything, really. So, yeah. Big special acknowledgement to an absolute great. We lost a great one on this one. So
absolutely. And she worked on a bunch of the Bard's Tale games.
She really
I listened to her talk about 3 specifically, like the whole story there.
Yeah. So. Yeah, just there's a lot of great shit out there. A lot of her time in the game industry is chronicled in her own words, and I think that it is all
so cool.
Yeah, just go look up the Burger Time with Becky videos. They're so good. I rewatched so many of those over the last week since her passing, just to kind of, man, look what we lost. It's so tragic and so unfortunate. But it looks like we have arrived at the end of another Soxcast, and as mentioned, the next time we talk, we'll be doing Game of the Year. And of course, I want to remind you that you can be a part of that. Pick your 3 games. Release year does not matter. Write a blurb about each and send it to podcast@socksmakepeoplesexy.net. Follow those same guidelines, and you can also send it to us in audio form. It'd be great if you did that. Just keep it under 5 minutes and we'll be good. So
Were you about to say video?
I was about to say video, and we're—I mean, even though we do have a video component to our podcast now, because we—I do post these on, you know, for the YouTube sickos out there that listen to podcasts on YouTube for some reason.
YouTube exclusive. You get to see
there. You go. There you go. Do the one person that sent in a video list. There's your YouTube exclusive. I would not do that.
Somebody actually does. We have to now.
Yeah, we do. Somebody's going to be a jackass and do it now. We've made it. We've manifested this, unfortunately. So, but yes, next time we're together, it'll be Game of the Year. Those episodes will be going up on probably December 24th and 25th, as per usual. So you got a nice little, you know, got a nice little bit of game celebration along with, you know, celebrating Santa giving you presents or whatever that holiday is about. It's something. There's something in there. Chocolate bunnies, something. I don't know, dude. Yeah. I don't have time to pay attention to all this shit. The world's dying, and that's all I can pay. That's all I can think about now. John Thayer, where can the folks at home find you?
FarawayTimes.com.
And Rhett.
I'm going to be busy writing my Game of the Year list.
Yeah, going to be doing that. That's going to be my next couple weeks, I imagine.
I have head emptied. I have not actually thought about the order yet.
Not at all, huh?
Maybe a little bit.
You're just kind of sneaking in. You get bored at work sometimes. You just, you know, what else are you going to think about? You don't have infinite HoloLive videos to listen to, do you? You probably do, actually.
They put about 100 hours of content an hour, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of so, is infinite.
Yeah, I guess. Well, then, yeah, you can find me at our Discord. That's where I'm hanging mostly right now. But that is going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Get us your Game of the Year lists, and we will see you next time, December 24th and 25th. But until then, just be sure to remember, we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.